Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchings. This month we're featuring a story by John F. Dobbin, a writer who first appeared in the pages of Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine in 1979 as a poet, with a story in verse form that went on to become a series, all of the tales set in the Yukon during the Klondike Gold Rush. A new verse entry in that series entitled Nugget appears in our current issue, September-October 2021. We hope you won't miss it. It's part of our 80th anniversary issue. John Dobbin didn't have just one debut in our magazine. In 1994, he made his prose fiction debut in our Department of First Stories with the mystery starring lawyers Michael Knight and Lex Devlin, and that series can now boast, in addition to several more short stories, 6 thriller novels. John Dobbin also occasionally writes non-series stories, such as the one you're about to listen to. Here he is reading his story, A Little Help from My Friend, from the March-April 2020 issue of EQMM.
Picture the darkest pit you can imagine and jump in. That's how it seemed. Every limb and organ of my body was in suspended disconnect, probably induced by some pain-killing medication. I could hear 2 faint words whispered in doctor-like tones, "No visitors." I tried groping back to some memory of the past. The best I could pull up was an ear-splitting crack. It could have been a gunshot. Nothing before, nothing after. I was about to give in and drift off when another muffled voice close by, maybe female, definitely professional, whispered something like, "Is there any hope?" Another voice, also professional, followed, "Slight, keep him sedated." I gave in to the pull. I let go of the tiny thread of consciousness. Heaven knows how many minutes or hours later, I reluctantly took it back. This time, a sharp-edged, spiky voice, definitely non-professional, non-medical, punched through the black cloud. "Hey, Jackie boy, how they running? Not so swift, eh? You look like chopped liver." I could swear I'd never heard the voice before, yet there was something intimately familiar about it. I couldn't force an audible voice through the tubes that ran in and out of every orifice of my head. I just seemed to form the words in my mind. "Who the hell are you? How'd you get past the no visitors?" I heard a sardonic laugh. "Cut the bull, Jackie boy. You know me. How many times have I carried your damn thriller novels to the top of the charts? I take all the heat, you take the cash and the fame." The words again formed in my mind by themselves. "This is totally screwy. It's impossible." The voice came back. "Yeah, well, so is most of the crap you write me through. But it sells like hell, doesn't it? No gripes, though. I think I'm more famous than you are." It finally dawned on me that it must be the drugs. I must be hallucinating. I could probably have shut it off, but it was taking my mind off the increasing pain. It was more comfortable to play along. "What do I call you?" "You're pulling my chain, right, Jackie boy? 14 Private Eye novels, every one a bestseller, and you don't remember the name of the character you put through hell in all of them?" Now I knew I'd gone daffy. "You're telling me you're my Private Eye character? You're Mickey O'Casey?" "No, I'm Peter Pan. Of course I'm O'Casey. I'm the one who takes all those bullets and beatings you dream up." "And you don't find this conversation a bit bizarre?" "Not really. You and I have been talking to each other 6 hours a day through every novel. You get me into all kinds of crap. Then who do you talk with about how I'm going to get out of it so you can write another book? Who do you think feeds you my dialogue so I don't sound like some tea sipper out of Agatha Christie? You just couldn't hear my actual voice before." I knew it was nuts, but I was beginning to enjoy it. "So, Mickey, shall I call you Mickey?" "Why not? You gave me the name." "I guess. So, why am I hearing your voice now?" "First, in your condition, you got no choice. You're a captive audience. Second, we got business." "What business?" "For starters, do you actually know what happened to you?" I had the same question. "No, not, you were shot." "Crap, am I going to die?" "Who am I, God?" "I seriously doubt it. Why are you here now?" "Think about it. I'm your character. My only life is in your head and on the paper. If you kick off, I'm history too. As long as you got a shot at pulling through, so do I." "You said we had business. What business?" "What I do. You made me a private eye. And a damn good one. I solve mysteries. We have a beaut right here. Who the hell shot you?" "Why does that matter to you?" "Because, genius, the one who missed could come back and do it right." I hadn't considered that. "So how do we start?" "Like it was your 15th novel. Can you remember where you were when you were shot?" "I'm not sure." "Take a few minutes. Give it the old college try." Daft as the whole interlude seemed, I could feel the juices begin to flow through my gray cells. The door to the past was slowly beginning to crack open. A few minutes later, I tried to reestablish mental contact. Mickey, you still there? Like, where would I go? Listen, I'm getting a flash. When I heard the shot, I was in my study at home, Beacon Street, Boston. Yeah, I know where it is. Doing what? It was at my desk. I was writing an email. I was facing out the window. I think it was early afternoon, maybe yesterday. Then what? That was it. The door opened behind me. I could hear the click. Then the shot. $1 million question. Who did the shooting? Did you see him? No, my back was to the door. All right, that limits it. Who had access to that part of your house? I thought. Actually, not so limited. I leave the front door unlocked. Brilliant. Then that includes everyone from family to the UPS man. Think, any recent enemies? Have you threatened any critics lately? I tried to reach back as far as I could into the black hole of my memory. Nothing surfaced. Mickey could tell. So here's where it's at, Jackie boy. Whoa! I'm not brain dead yet. You call me Jackie boy one more time and I'll write you out of the next novel. That seemed to delight Mickey. Good, you're getting some steam back. Here's the deal, John. Next time the nurse brings your pain medication, you don't take it. It may be painful, but you need your marbles back, for both of us. When the last dose wore off, true to Mickey's words, the pain came galloping back. It brought me enough consciousness to tell the nurse I didn't want medication. Within an hour, the pain ramped up. The only relief was to focus my mind on anything pre-shot. I could sense that there was something out there, something recent. Mickey's questions kept driving me back like a hypnotist. Damn, Mickey, it's out there. I just can't pull it in. Well, keep trying. Think yesterday. Think the night before. There was something. I think I was upset about it. So keep going. Go after it. Pull it in. I'm trying, but with you talking, could you just tune out for a minute? Let me concentrate. I must have concentrated myself back into unconsciousness. When I came back, the clock said 8:30. I assumed p.m. I was about to try to plunge back into memory land when a shock ran through me that jarred back every synapse in my memory system. It was a faint voice. It came from down the corridor. It was arguing with the nurse at the desk. I whispered, Mickey, psst, you asleep? I never sleep, John. What? I've got it. Listen fast. It was last Tuesday night, my apartment. I had a party. It was to celebrate my royalty advance on the next novel. Who was there? A lot of friends, other writers, but also my editor, Mike Knowles. So? I was showing Mike my study. He saw a canceled check in a frame on the wall. He asked what it was. I told him he should know it was my first advance for the first Mickey O'Casey novel. And? He turned red. He said, in his words, like hell it is. He said that first advance was for at least four times that amount. He asked who wrote the check. I told him all my royalties went direct from the publisher to my agent, Alex Sean. Alex takes his 15% and sends me a check for the rest. Mike had fire in his eyes. He said, that thieving scumbag of an agent fleeced you pretty well. Come to my office tomorrow morning. Let's check out the royalties for the last 14 novels. The voice in the corridor seemed to be winning the argument with the nurse. I could hear footsteps down the corridor start in my direction. Listen, Mickey. Gotta make this fast. Mike and I checked. My agent, Alex, he's been skimming more than half of my royalties for the past 14 years. So what did you do? I called him around noon. I told him I was going to the district attorney. The footsteps in the corridor stopped a short distance from the door. Another nurse took up running interference for me. I could hear Alex's voice saying he was my brother. He had serious news for me about our father. Listen, Mickey, Alex pleaded with me not to go to the DA till he could talk to me. He was coming over that evening to make it right. I agreed to tell no one until I heard him out. Do you think? Mickey, that's Alex outside the door. He must be here to finish the job. The second nurse was softening to Alex's phony family plea. If you got any ideas, Mickey, I'm wide open to suggestion. I thought I saw him grin. Damn, it's fun having you on the wrong end of a gun instead of me. I was hoping for something more constructive. All right, John, give this a shot. Is that your cell phone on the stand beside the bed? I glanced over. Yes. Can you reach it? I was laced to the bed by tubes running in and out of everything. Stretching from the phone, shot pain into places I didn't know I had places. With one Olympic effort, I got my fingers on the phone and fell back into bed. You're a hero, John. Now do this. He spat out a few instructions. I typed as fast as my fingers would move. I had just finished as the door slowly swung open. My so-called brother was outlined in the light from the corridor. He stepped in and closed the door. I gave my best impression of being unconscious. I could hear his soft, cat-like footsteps moving toward the bed. The room was in almost total darkness. Only tiny lights on my vital signs monitor were leading him to my bedside. By now I was sure he had something in mind for me that would look like a natural death. Not much of a push from how close I was to it from the gunshot. I could hear his approach. 10 feet, 8 feet, 6 feet. I could hear Mickey. "Not yet, John. I'll say when." When he hit 4 feet, I heard Mickey say, "Now." I woke my phone and my thumb hit the camera icon. The flash went off as I snapped a picture of the open-mouthed shock on Alex's face. He froze. I forced what voice I could muster as I tapped my phone a couple more times. "Hello, Alex. Good picture. It's now attached to a tweet I just sent to the district attorney. It tells a short version of the story. That should make the case against you for attempted murder. You want to finish the job and go for life for murder one?" Alex was out the door at a pace that left skid marks. I heard later that the district attorney was quick on the trigger when he got my email. Alex scarcely made it a block away from the Mass General Hospital before he was in the hands of Boston's finest. Contrary to the odds, I recovered. In fact, I'm now halfway into the 15th Mickey O'Casey novel. I've never actually heard Mickey's voice again. Who knows, maybe I never did. The mind is a tricky thing. Still, I find I'm taking a lot better care of Mickey in novel number 15.
A Little Help from My Friend is copyrighted by John F. Dobbin. Music for this podcast was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing and editing for the podcast were done by Ray Purdom and Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycreenmysterymagazine.com.